Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. It is October 21st, 2010. Week 8 is upon us. We're at the midpoint of the season. Most of these teams have played 6 games with 6 games to go. We are getting into the thick of conference races. Teams are falling off. Beware if you're ranked number one. If number one's in front of your name, you just might be in trouble because the last 2 weeks, number one has fallen. And we have a packed show for you today. As always, joining us in our roundtable are Justin Van Fulpen and Kelron Sykes. Later on, we will have the Reverend Ralph Mancini breaking down some of the big games, including LSU at Auburn in a game that could decide the SEC West, Wisconsin at Iowa in a game that could decide the Big Ten Conference. And our special guest coming up in about 8 or 9 minutes is wide receiver Austin Pettis from the Boise State Broncos in our player spotlight. Big show, a lot going on in the world of college football. And I thought, you know, as I mentioned, being that this is the beginning of the second half of the season, so to speak, I thought this would be a perfect time to look back at our preseason picks in terms of our conference picks and who would win the conference and see, you know, if we were just sitting down here at the table here and looking at our cards, what would we do here? Would we raise here? Would we fold here, throw our cards away and say, hey, this is a bad hand. It's time to walk away. Or would we raise and say, hey, this hand is looking even better today than it looked when I just got it. Let's ante up. Let's up the ante. So let's start with the ACC. We went there with Florida State. You know, I'm not going to say it was a big reach or it was a gutsy pick, but, it was a little limb. It wasn't a flimsy limb, but we went out on the limb a little bit with the Florida State Seminoles. We didn't go Virginia Tech. We didn't go Miami. And this was before Virginia Tech lost to JMU. It was before Miami was undressed by Ohio State and then even more so by Florida State. And right now, there's no reason not to stick with the Noles. You got to stick with the Noles. They're playing good football. I know Ponder did not play his best football at all, but I think they're going to hang in there. They're looking like the Florida State. I shouldn't say they're looking like the Florida State of old. That would be overstating things because that Florida State of old would be a top two, top three, probably number one team in the country right now. But they're looking more and more like that. They're heading in that direction. So they're not quite where they were, you know, in the 80s in the heyday of Bobby Bowden. But they're a lot better than they've been the last 3, 4, 5 years, you know, probably even more than that. I mean, you know, basically since they lost that championship game to Oklahoma back in 2000, they've been headed in the wrong direction ever since. So I think, you know, this year we're starting to see them go back, and we're seeing that on the defensive side of the ball where they're averaging, you know, only 16 points allowed, which is second, which is best in the ACC. They have 30 sacks, which leads the conference, 9 more than North Carolina State, who's second. The big man there is defensive end Brandon Jenkins, a sophomore who's got 7 sacks. And, you know, remember there was a time where Florida State was just sending defensive ends into the NFL, you know, the Andre Wadsworths, the Bullwares. Just year after year, there would be a pass rusher who would be a high pick coming out of Florida State, and we haven't seen that in quite some time from the Noles, and it looks like Jenkins might be that guy. Marcus White is a solid senior, not quite up to that caliber, but the defense is playing better. The big reason we went with them was the offensive line. I love teams that have 5 returning starters on the offensive line that, you know, that kids that have played 3, 4 years, you know, these guys are all juniors, seniors, a lot of experience, some star power in Hudson and Datko. I mean, you know, not star power in terms of the national landscape, but star power in terms of offensive line play. And you can see it in the running game. I mean, the impact is significant. Last year, this team averaged 149 yards per game, 4.6 yards per carry. This year, 211 a game, 5.7 yards per carry. So, you know, Florida State's never known as a pounded out, grounded out type team, but you know, they've always had a pretty good running game. You know, a guy like Warrick Dunn played there. They may not have gotten the amount of carries that other teams got and other big name backs got, but they got made big plays, and they always had good yards per carry, and that's what they're starting to do. Big East, we went with the Pitt Panthers, even though we knew the quarterback question was going to be something that wasn't going to go answered until the season went underway. And last year, even though the defense was big time, Deion Lewis was the player of the year in the Big East. Jonathan Baldwin was the stud wide receiver of the Big East last year. You know, Bill Stahl was huge for this team a year ago. He was a tremendous impact player. He really elevated his game, and that's why Pitt was in the thick of the race and played Cincinnati basically to a missed extra point at the end of the season to make a BCS bowl and have their best year under Dave Wannstedt. Bill Stahl played a key role in that. Now this year, you know, fast forward, we lost Greg Romeus, which is a huge loss, something we didn't anticipate. Guy who was projected to be the defensive player of the year in the conference, a potential All-American at defensive end. We're talking about a potential first-round pick in the NFL draft. So, you know, we were down on him week one, and, you know, it turns out a lot of that probably had to do with the back injury. So not having him there is a tremendous loss for this defense. That can't be overstated. But, you know, the question mark came back to burn us. Tino Sinceri really struggled early on, but the kid is kind of coming on. The last 2 weeks, 538 yards, 5 touchdowns. I know they played a mediocre Syracuse team last week. They didn't do it against big-time competition. But let's be honest, folks. The Big East isn't big-time competition. I understand West Virginia is ranked, but who exactly have the Mountaineers beaten? I mean, their best win is against an average Maryland team in an average ACC. You know, they need a miracle to beat a 1-5 Marshall team. Yeah, I know they stayed close against LSU, but hey, who doesn't stay close against LSU? McNeese State stayed close against LSU. Tennessee stayed close against LSU, a team that's lost 5 games in a row. So everybody stays close against LSU. I'm not going to give you that much credit for doing that. Everybody does that. But I think, you know, I'm going to stick with Pitt. I mean, I know people probably think, hey, throw away the cards, go in the other direction. I think you got Deion Lewis coming back healthy. You've discovered Ray Graham, who is actually more highly touted, more highly recruited than Deion Lewis, and said, hey, let's give this guy the rock as well. This kid can really run the football. He's explosive. He's got 589 yards, 5 touchdowns, averaging 8.5 yards a carry. Yeah, and you still haven't gotten Baldwin going. You know, I don't know what's going on there. You know, sometimes he looks frustrated. I think the struggles early on in the season in the passing game has maybe caused the, you know, maybe he's lost a little enthusiasm. Maybe he's lost some confidence. He's still, you know, not finding himself. He's only got 383 yards on 25 catches. So the overall numbers aren't there. The numbers per catch aren't there. He isn't making as many big plays as he did for them a year ago. But I think as Sinceri now is improving and kind of getting a better feel, I expect, you know, Baldwin's going to have a better second half of the season. And let's not forget the key game, Backyard Brawl, November 26th, is in Heinz Field. It's in Pittsburgh. So the Mountaineers got to come to Pittsburgh to take on the Panthers. All right, let's move on from the Big East and the Big Ten. And once again, you know, I'm not going to say we went out on a limb, but we didn't go with the favorite either here. We did not go with the favorite. We did not go with the Ohio State University, who lost to the Wisconsin Badgers last week, a team that we thought would have a very good year and could challenge for this crown. But our pick was Iowa. They were our pick last year. Maybe we were there a year early. It didn't look so good. I got a little in-house flack because I'm kind of known as the Iowa guy. Somehow I've become an Iowa guy as if I'm an Iowa alum. I got nothing for Iowa in terms of being a fan. Believe me, I don't have a cornhead hat in my closet hiding somewhere. I don't have an old long or Harmon jersey that I have hidden somewhere. I just think the Iowa Hawkeyes are a darn good football team. I think they have the best defensive line in football. I think they have some playmakers on offense and their wide receivers. And Ricky Stanzi is making a big step this year, folks. A lot of people like to get down on this kid. 17 touchdowns, 15 interceptions a year ago, completed just over 56% of his passes. But I loved how he would take chances. He wasn't afraid to try to make a play, and he knew at times he needed to do that. And he stepped up in crunch time. He made a lot of big touchdown passes in the fourth quarter, and clearly the Hawkeyes missed him when he was hurt. They had a great record when he was there. You know, they lost to Northwestern when he went down. They lost to Ohio State without him. And even though he had a big pick against Arizona, this year the numbers are, you know, completely turned around. And right now he's on pace for 26 touchdowns, which is 9 more, and 4 interceptions, which is 11 fewer, while completing 68% of his passes. So that's a huge, huge leap. Now, they got with, you know, the schedule isn't easy. They got Wisconsin this week. They got Michigan State next week. They still have to play the Ohio State University, but all those games are at home, and all those teams have to go through the pink locker room before they get on the football field. So I still think even with one loss, remember, it's an out-of-conference loss, so it's not going to impact the Big Ten crown. I still like my Iowa Hawkeyes to come out and pull out this Big Ten title. It's not going to be easy. I have a lot of respect for Wisconsin. We're going to talk more about that game. We're going to talk more about that matchup later on with Ralph Mancini in terms of that Wisconsin offensive line, which, you know, I asked our Big Ten guy last week, Lloyd, was he concerned at all about that matchup with Ohio State's front seven and that Wisconsin offensive line? That Wisconsin offensive line is legit. They are good. All right, folks, we're running a little behind time, but we got to go to our player spotlight here with Austin Pettis, the wide receiver from Boise State, California kid. Had a lot of fun talking with him earlier today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of College Football Insider's Player Spotlight. And with us today is wide receiver Austin Pettis, who has recorded 25 receptions for 387 yards and 4 touchdowns for the number 2 ranked Boise State Broncos. As a junior, Pettis was a first-team all-WAC performer after making 63 receptions and scoring 14 touchdowns, including a touchdown in 10 straight games to start the season, setting a school record. He is also on the Biletnikoff Award watch list. Austin, thanks a lot for joining us today. How's it going?
Good. Thank you very much.
All right, Austin, you know, before we get into the football stuff, I mean, people have seen you play. They know you can catch the football. They know what you can do there. Tell us a little bit about Austin Pettis off the field. What do you like?
I mean, I'm still a sports guy. Basketball, actually my favorite sport, and baseball fan as well. Got a lot of baseball in my family. I'm on both sides professionally, so, I mean, it's all about sports my whole life, inside and out.
I was meaning to ask, I didn't see it anywhere online, but I see you're from Anaheim, California, and the name Pettis is kind of familiar. I remember a guy playing outfield. Are you related to Gary Pettis?
Yes, sir, that is my uncle.
All right, I thought so. I didn't find it online, but I was like, I remember a pretty fast guy with the Angels that used to run around and steal a lot of bases, right?
Yep, just a little bit of that.
Is that where you got your speed?
I think that side of town was definitely where I got it.
How do you think yours compares to his in his heyday?
I think he's definitely got me on that one.
He might even get you now, maybe, huh?
Yeah, he could do. He's staying in shape.
So do you get a chance at all to follow these playoffs much?
Oh, yeah. I've been keeping up with it a lot, checking online and watching some games when we have a little bit of off time.
So do you have a team that you're pulling for this year?
I mean, definitely the Rangers.
Is that more love for the Rangers, or is that some Yankee hate there?
Actually, my uncle's the first base coach for them.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm so involved in the college game, I've lost track and followed up my baseball stuff. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. They're definitely looking good. They look like they might be World Series bound.
Yeah, playing real good right now.
And talk to me a little bit about, you know, Justin Life in Boise, Idaho, compared to California. Was that a big culture shock for you?
It was a little bit different. There's a lot of Dodger fans out here. I mean, the town is pretty crazy, all about football. It's a lot more slowed down. Not as much going on. Keeps you out of trouble. And I mean, it's kind of cool to be kind of the show around town where everyone, I mean, kind of knows you and is excited to see you guys play week in and week out. And I just want to see you do well.
I see that there's a decent amount of California guys on the team. A couple years ago, I got a chance to meet Ian Johnson when he was in New York getting ready for the NFL draft. Do you guys kind of help recruit one another?
I think so. I know a lot of people played against each other in high school, so help coaches out with recommendations and if they think a player is good or not. And I think a lot of guys want to see more California people out here. I mean, it's cool to see people that you played against and around your area being able to take that next level and go to a big-time college, and especially yours.
And we're talking to wide receiver Austin Pettis from the Boise State Broncos, who are ranked second in the country. Austin, I noticed you had a Twitter account but it is protected. So is that a team move thing, or is that something that you do by choice?
It's kind of both, but actually, as of the beginning of this season, Coach Pete had us all stay away from Twitter, and no one is allowed to be involved with that right now during season.
All right, so it's kind of like stay away from it during the year. I did notice, though, I don't want to give away the whole name, but Too Legit is in the name. It's not the entire thing. Are you a big MC Hammer fan, should I assume?
I mean, decently. I mean, that's the number. My dad and actually some of my uncles, I think they knew MC Hammer a little bit, like his music, and I mean, Too Legit is the little nickname that he had for me.
All right, do you have a favorite MC Hammer song?
It's got to be Too Legit to Quit.
Over You Can't Touch This with the Super Freak rhythm in the back?
My dad, they probably have a different decision than me, but that's got to be mine.
All right, I feel that. Let me ask you this. On the reverse side of Twitter, if you could only follow one person, who would that be?
That is a tough decision, but I think it'd have to be Ochocinco just because he tweets so much, and, he's pretty funny.
Have you gotten a chance to check out the new show there on Versus, the T. Ocho show with Chad and Terrell Owens?
I've actually seen a little bit of it, yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it's not bad to have your own TV show. I know that looks like it's fun.
Now, I know that's a little different than Boise style, right? I mean, the terms of the celebrations and that stuff.
Exactly, yeah. We're a little more conservative here.
Are you going to bust out something then a little more when we see you play in the league next year?
Hopefully. If I get that opportunity, I'm going to try to do a little bit.
Now, I also noticed that you were involved in the process when they did the new uniforms. I was there at the unveiling in New York. How do you get to be on that committee as a player?
I think our equipment manager kind of picked the guys on the team who really care about what they look like and have a little bit of sense of style. So we got about 8 to 10 of us to kind of get thrown away around ideas with some Nike reps.
So would you then consider yourself to be a pretty fashionable guy?
I think decently. Try and keep it a little nice and clean cut.
So, let me ask you this. You said the guys who care what they look like. Which guy on the team least cares what he looks like?
Oh, gosh. that one's a little rough because there's a few. I don't know. We got a couple big linemen and big D linemen who don't necessarily care too much.
We don't want to single anybody out. We'll just say that they're ugly.
We don't want to single them out, but I'm sure if you saw them, you'd know.
I could pick them out pretty quick. Let's get on the field here a little bit, Austin. And we are talking to wide receiver Austin Pettis from Boise State. From a person who maybe hasn't seen you play too much, what's the scouting report on Austin Pettis?
I think I'm kind of that typical possession receiver and a little bit of bigger body. Just more underneath stuff, kind of over the middle. Decent hands, I mean, trying not to drop too many passes. And kind of a smart player, understand reading defenses a lot. And I think it complements well because we have, Titus Young also, who is kind of that explosive receiver. So we're kind of both ends of the spectrum for our receiving core.
And how's your leg doing, 100%?
Yeah, I'm definitely 100%. I'm feeling really good this season.
One thing I've always wanted to ask you since I first saw you do this is, how did you end up as a holder? I mean, I don't think there's another starting receiver in the country, a receiver that's an all-conference guy, be a holder.
My receiver coach actually was a quarterback, and he was a holder too. And we were losing one of our guys who was a holder, and he thought I'd just throw me in there to see how I did, and I did kind of well. And halfway through our first game of the season, they threw me back there, and I've been doing it ever since.
Do you ever come up to the coaches with ideas for fakes?
We talk about that all the time. We're always trying to scheme up some people and figure different things out if we see something that might be open. So, I mean, we always got at least something in every week.
And I tried to stay away from this topic, but I'm just curious, how often do you get asked BCS-type questions?
probably every day. A lot of fans enjoy that. And I think that's good for the fans, too. I mean, it makes it more interesting for them. But, I know we can't worry about it too much. We don't control that. And just make sure we go in week in and week out and take care of our ball games.
So do you ever do any scoreboard checking to see, how Virginia Tech might be doing or Nevada's doing, that type of stuff?
Oh, yeah, you definitely do that a little bit. I mean, you want to see teams that you play do well and teams that you're going to play, I mean, continue to win as well. So you get a little more hype for the games. And I know, yeah, Nevada, I think they lost last week to Hawaii, but, I mean, they've been having a real good season, too. We played them in a couple of weeks coming up, and V-Tech has definitely picked it up since we played them, too, as well. I think they've lost since then.
All right, Austin, before we let you go, I'd like to put people on a two-minute drill. I'm going to throw you a bunch of quick-hitting questions at you. You ready to go?
Yep.
All right. Now, you mentioned you do, you're a big sports guy. I know you played basketball in high school. So what position did you play?
Point guard and shooting guard.
Kind of a combo guard, then?
Yeah. But, I mean, it just depends on what type of players are running in offense.
So who's would you remind us of? What kind of game did you have? Were you more like an Iverson, a Kobe? What kind of game did you have?
Kobe's my favorite player, so I got to say Kobe.
All right, that was one of my other questions. Who's your favorite player? How about who's your favorite team name? Should I assume you're a Laker fan all the way?
Lakers till I die.
and you know, staying in that theme then, what does that mean? What are your thoughts on LeBron and that whole situation with him taking his talent to South Beach?
I think it's going to be really interesting, and I think it's going to make it that much better if they make it to the finals and you get to see a Lakers Heat finals.
So who are the favorites then? Are the Lakers, they're the champs. Are they still the favorites?
Yeah, they got to be. They got to be the favorites.
Did you, as a basketball fan in general, were you happy to see LeBron go there, or did you think that was bad for the NBA?
I'm not necessarily too happy, but I know a lot of fans liked it. Not like it as much on my part, just because that's a pretty stacked team now. It's going to be rough for the Lakers to win this one, but it'll be a good test for them.
We talked a little bit about MC Hammer. Who is your favorite music artist? I'm sure it's somebody else, a little more contemporary.
I'm going to say Drake or Lil Wayne.
Drake or Lil Wayne?
Listen to the most.
All right, how about go a little old school? I'm in my mid-30s myself, so who do you like from the old school guys, somebody from the 80s?
Old school guys? Shoot, I don't even know too much old school music, really.
You got a lot of options out there in California, you know, guys like Tupac, Dr. Dre, Ice
King. I
would have
to say it's probably Snoop.
Snoop? All right, a little Snoop and Luke action.
He was solid, yeah.
Fair enough. All right, and that is Austin Pettis, wide receiver at Boise State. Austin, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. We want to wish you luck for the rest of the season.
No problem. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks a lot.
All right, that was Austin Pettis, as I said, from Boise State. We had a lot of fun there talking about stuff on and off the field. And now we're going to bring in our man from the great state of Michigan, Justin Van Fulpen. Justin, how's it going?
Good. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. So, you know, I asked Austin, you know, Mr. Too Legit to Quit, what his favorite MC Hammer song is. What's your favorite MC Hammer song?
You can't go wrong with Can't Touch This.
That's what I'm saying. All right. All right. We got one. I guess if I'm breaking the tiebreaker, we got 2-1 for You Can't Touch This. You got the Rick James going on in the background, Super Freak. You got to go in that direction. I threw you a little curveball, though. I'm glad I didn't surprise you, though, you know?
No, you know, so you got to love the Hammer fans.
All right, Justin, let's jump into the football here. Nebraska at Oklahoma, big game this week. Cornhuskers, top five team, got knocked down last week against Texas, taking on undefeated Oklahoma State. And I can't wait to see the matchup here is Oklahoma State's passing attack against that Nebraska pass defense. You have the quarterback there, Brandon Weeden's thrown for almost 2,000 yards, 19 touchdowns. Their receivers putting up big-time numbers, but I don't think they've faced a pass defense the caliber of Nebraska. How do you see this matchup breaking down?
Well, I mean, you look at the receivers with, as far as Oklahoma State, Justin Blackman, you know, he's a guy who's had a touchdown in every game, you know, has 12 touchdowns already this season, you know, was on pace to you know, almost eclipse 2,000 yards, you know, as far as pass receiving. He has just come out and just been a great receiver. When I watch him, a guy who reminds me in the league is Anquan Boldin, because he's just that strong as far as he's not going to be taken down with a, you know, as far as an arm tackle, runs through that. Good as far as run after the catch type guy, and really put up some great stats there. But he hasn't seen the likes of cornerback of Prince Akamura, you know, there from Nebraska. Just a great cover corner, a guy who is a, you know, a top five type talent in next year's NFL draft. And he's battling Patrick Peterson there from LSU to be that number one corner. And both of those guys are going to go high. And really, what he's got some strength and got some ability. So that to me, that's going to be the matchup. You have Prince against Blackmon. You know, really, who's going to be able to take care of that matchup? Who's going to be able to really exploit that passing game? And I think as far as the senior is going to go ahead and out-duel the sophomore, and that's why Nebraska is going to win. They're not going to lose two in a row, and really this run of Oklahoma State being undefeated is going to stop there in Lincoln.
Yeah, I'm leaning with you there, Justin. I'm liking the Cornhuskers this week. You know, it's funny. I noticed there was a column out there about could Lee take over for Taylor Martinez, and I'm like, are you kidding me? He was he went from being a Heisman quarterback now to maybe he's going to be benched, and he didn't get any help from his wide receivers last week. Neither did Lee, for that matter. Nebraska, I think as long as they don't make a ton of mistakes, I'm with you there. I think they're going to take this one and kind of get back on their winning ways. One more Big 12 matchup. This one's an interdivision matchup between Missouri and Oklahoma. You got Blaine Gabbert on one side, and you got Landry Jones on the other side. Of course, Ryan Broyles, I think he's on pace for like 380 catches, something like that. You got the kid TJ Moe with 50 catches for Mizzou, Michael Agnew with 49. So you have three of the top pass catchers in the country. Which passing attacker are you leaning with? Which side are you going with here?
Well, I think you can't go wrong with the Oklahoma Sooners. They've just got so much talent, as far as offense and even on defense, you know. But as far as I think what helps that passing game is DeMarco Murray there. And he's running the football better than he's ever run. And really, he's really helping Landry Jones and Ryan Broyles and as far as all those receivers there at Oklahoma and to really keep that machine going. Now, Missouri does have the game there, you know, for us at home, so that's going to help them, and I think that is the ability to keep it close. And I really like, you know, as far as Galbert, the quarterback there at Missouri, I think he's probably a better pro prospect than Landry Jones when it's all said and done. You know, he's big, he's shot, he's, you know, 6'5", 235, you know, he's got all the physical ability, he's got a strong arm, makes great decisions as far as with the football. And he's a guy who could, you know, declare early, and there's some talk about now about, hey, is he going to leave early, and does he, you know, fit into that first round as far as talking about junior and underclassmen quarterbacks there. So, but I think, you know, as far as offensively and defensively, Oklahoma is just too much for Missouri this Saturday, and that's why I think they maintain that number one ranking in the BCS, come this Sunday.
Justin, once again, 2 for 2, I agree with you 100%. I think Oklahoma is going to go in there into Missouri and really take it to the Tigers. Their defense, Missouri, has played really well so far in Big 12 play. But, you know, Texas A&M, let's be honest, Texas A&M is not that good. They have not looked impressive unless they're playing a cupcake. So, to me, that didn't surprise me last week. I thought Missouri would take it to A&M. But now they're really stepping up big time in terms of competition. And I think Oklahoma is going to really establish themselves as a team to beat in the Big 12, if not the entire nation, a good chance to run undefeated and keep that number one status in the BCS, as you said. All right, Justin, we're going to welcome our buddy here, Kelron Sykes, former Oregon State Beaver. Kelron, how you doing today?
Everything is good. How about yourself?
All right, good. I'm excited, man. It's the middle of the season. We're starting to really get a good feel for most of these teams, most of these players, and it's just about time for crunch time as we head into the second half of the college football season. And we're going to go to our roundtable right now, and the first two topics are going to be about that big game in the SEC, LSU taking on Auburn. Cameron Newton, I wrote about this guy, you know, earlier in the season after that Mississippi State game, and I thought, wow, I said, is that, you know, that looks like a bigger, faster Tim Tebow out there, somebody who's just running people over with his size, but he actually has a little more breakaway speed. He can run away from people, but, you know, very shaky in terms of his passing skills, some questionable decisions. Ball floats out there a little bit every once in a while. Kelron, let's start with you. Where is he at as an NFL prospect?
I think he needs to be a little bit more or get a little bit more consistent with his passing game. He seems to struggle with reading coverages and, you know, his decision-making in terms of, you know, his route checks and whatnot. Definitely a big-body kid. I mean, this kid is, what, wow, he's over 250 pounds almost and, you know, well over 6'4", so he has the physical, you know, attributes to play in the NFL. Just in terms of decision making right now, that's still a question. But nevertheless, the talent is there.
Justin, how about you? Where do you think Cameron Newton is right now? As Kelron mentioned, you know, the physique is impressive. It's something that you really don't see that often, and he could really run as well. But, you know, as we know, that doesn't always translate to the next league.
Well, I think the standpoint of this is a guy who is, you know, his first year in the SEC competition. You know, he's got some ability. He's got some talent. We all can recognize that. But like you said, he's got to get more consistent. And I think he can translate to the NFL. Well, let's look at as far as his comparison to Vince Young. And I think that's where we look at. And I think he's a better overall passer than what Vince Young was, you know, as a junior, you know, coming out of Texas when we saw where Young was drafted. You know, he's a big athletic kid. He's a better passer than what Tim Tebow was. And Tebow was a first-round draft pick. So I think when it's all said and done, he's going to come back for a senior season, all indications are, and that's a good move, you know, from Newton. But I think he's going to get better, and I think as far as eventually in 2012 NFL draft, we're going to be talking about this guy as a possible first-round draft pick quarterback just because of his physical ability, and he's going to learn the game better as he goes through the rest of this SEC, you know, campaign and goes into next year and really just kind of learns the offense better and learns the game of football better, and he's going to be a big-time player, in my opinion, at the next level.
Honestly, guys, I got to say, I'm still not sold. You know, we all made kind of the Tebow comparisons. I did, Justin did. I'm not the biggest Tebow fan either. You guys know from last year, I never was, not as a college player, but as a pro prospect. And I got to throw it out there since this did come up, you know, watching the post game of the Jets there, everybody here in New York was just raving about Tebow. The guy averaged 3.8 yards per carry. You know, it's amazing. And imagine if he actually averaged like 6 yards a carry in four carry. You know, imagine if he ran for 40 yards. I think, you know, people would name him the rookie of the year right away. Anyway, I got to get off my Tim Tebow soapbox. Let's move to the other side of the ball. Defensive tackles, Nick Fairley for Auburn, Drake Nevis from LSU, two guys that are really coming on strong this year. Nevis was somebody we knew about, a senior. Fairley, kind of unknown coming into this year, a junior, but it looks like he could definitely be somebody that we'll consider to declare. Justin, let's start with you. Which guy are you going with right now if you had to draft? Fairley or Nevis?
Drake.
They're both on the board.
I'm going to take Drake Nevis. I think as far as he's just shown this, his quickness and his strength and ability to really, you know, as far as really push that pile, push that, you know, as far as the pocket and really be a disruptive force. So I really like what Drake Nevis brings to the table. So if I was, you know, they're both on board, I need a defensive tackle and a 4-3 defense, I'm taking Drake Nevis.
Kelron, how about yourself? I think I already know where you're going.
Yeah, you know, I love Drake. I mean, I've seen this guy line up in a zero technique and a three technique and just dominate plays, you know, consistently. I mean, he has a first step that kind of mirrors that of Warren Sapp, you know, i.e. what he did in Miami. I mean, I've seen this guy long arm, you know, offensive lineman with one arm, and just with the explosiveness that he has coming off the LOS, line of scrimmage, I mean, that's rarely seen, in particular the man of that size. So I definitely have to start my draft with Drake.
I'm going to go the other direction, guys. I'm going to disagree with you guys and go with my boy there, Nick Fairley from Auburn. And it's not just because we had him on early in the season. But, hey, it doesn't hurt, let's be honest. The numbers are pretty comparable. Both guys got 5 sacks. Fairley's got 2 more tackles for a loss. So it's not really about the numbers. But I think you got to factor in that Drake Nevis there at LSU is playing with a lot more talent with him. Fairley is really carrying this defense almost by himself to some extent. You do have Josh Bynes there, a middle linebacker that's having a solid year. But, hey, it's close, and I think there's a good chance we could see both of these guys going in the first round of the 2011 draft. All right, head-to-head matchup. You love when you can, you know, kind of examine these guys and watch these guys clash head-to-head and see what they could do. Kelron, let's stay with you here. Head-to-head, left tackle Gabe Kareemi from Wisconsin against the dreadlocked man from Iowa, Adrian Claiborne, defensive end.
Yeah, Gabe is a guy with extremely long arms, a powerful kick step, and a powerful punch, you know, at the point of attack. You know, Adrian, you know, I saw the Arizona game. I was a little bit let down just in terms of his productivity there, but nevertheless, he's kind of picked it up, so to speak. I like Gabe. Gabe is a solid offensive lineman, probably the best in the business right now. He probably will be the number one tackle taken, you know, in the draft in 2011. So I expect Gabe to hold his own against Adrian. Now, granted, Adrian is a powerful pass rusher. You know, he exemplifies, you know, great pass rush ability just in terms of the slap, swim, this club. But I would like to see more of an explosive first step coming from him, you know, particularly leading up to the draft next year. But once again, I love Gabe and what he does, you know, with his kick step, and he's just so powerful at the point of attack. And, you know, he, like I said, he's probably going to be the first tackle taken off the board in 0-11.
All right, Justin, how about you? What's your take on this head-to-head matchup?
I think we saw what Gabe can do last week against, you know, Cameron Haywood of Ohio State and really neutralized him. And to me, you know, Claiborne and as far as Cameron are kind of the same type of a guy. They're a physical, you know, defensive end. They don't really have a type of, you know, as far as speed rush, or not those speed rushers. And I think that's what happens with Gabe is he kind of get overextended with the speed rushers on there, but he can really handle the power rushers. And, you know, so I'm going to go ahead and still go ahead and take Claiborne just because he's a higher-rated guy. He's going to be a more impact standpoint at the next level. But you could see as far as Gabe neutralizing him this week. But as far as a draft guy, great, who I like better, I'm going Adrian Claiborne.
All right, it'll be fun to watch what these guys do on Saturday, going up head-to-head pretty much almost every play. And both of them kind of get a chance to make a statement, both for their teams in the college season as well as the NFL scouts. Justin, thanks a lot for joining us. Looking forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Kelron, we're going to stay with you here and go out to your conference there, the Pac-10 on the left coast. Tonight, big game for Oregon, top-rated team in the polls. Oregon Ducks undefeated, playing host to UCLA. We got three really, really talented young players in this game, and UCLA, believe it or not, actually has two of them. But, you know, they just don't have the overall depth that Oregon does. I'm just curious what you think. Are these guys going to stay or go? Let's start with linebacker Akeem Ayers Jr. from UCLA. Stay or go?
Yeah, Akeem is probably the overall probably the most athletic linebacker probably that's draft eligible, just in terms of what he can do versus a run in the pass. I mean, he covers a lot of space in pass coverage. He's able to rush the passer. I mean, we've seen him chase down balls from the backside. I don't really foresee him saying, I mean, unless he's, you know, obviously he needs to get his degree, but unless he's really degree-driven or academically driven, I don't see a reason for him to stay in school.
Yeah, he's looking more and more like a first-round pick every time you watch him play. Staying in that Bruins defense, how about their safety, Raheem Moore?
Oh, Raheem, he's a guy that's a downhill thumper. I mean, also, too, he's great in terms of locking up on the number two receiver, the slide receiver, you know, in their scheme. And he's a guy that covers a lot of space as well. I think he's more aggressive in the run versus the pass. But nevertheless, he's another guy that I think right now should go in terms of leaving for the NFL draft. He's probably a mid to late first round guy right now, depending on what, you know, what draft order we have. But he's definitely a guy that's going to play a long time in the NFL.
So we're talking about possibly here the top linebacker and top safety, right?
Yes, sir.
Now on the other side of the ball, you know, he's not getting talked a lot about in terms of being a guy who could declare, but he's a redshirt sophomore, so he's eligible. And, you know, there's a lot of running backs who aren't having great years. LaMichael James, if he continues to have this type of year and has a Heisman-type year, do you think he's somebody that could declare, or is he going to stay and come back to school?
I think he'll come back to school just for the simple fact that we need to see more of him being an inside runner. I mean, outside of the numbers and the edge and whatnot in the wing, he is dangerous. I mean, he's, you know, obviously he has the track speed from his track days, you know, before Oregon. And he's a very, very explosive, very elusive running back. I'd like to see more in terms of running inside the tackles. But I definitely see him coming back next year. And, you know, Oregon is going to be talked about as one of two teams in the country next year just in terms of playing for the national championship. So I definitely foresee him coming back.
All right, you see him coming back. I'm not sure. I'm going to wait and see how the season goes. But I think if he has a Heisman-type year and just keeps on putting up tremendous numbers, I think it's got to be tempting. How about just for tonight's game? You know, there's a lot of guys banged up on both sides of the ball. Oregon's going to be missing, I think, a couple guys on defense. Their quarterback's not 100%. It looks like Prince is not going to play for UCLA. It looks like Rosario is not going to play, their wide receiver. Any chance the Bruins can keep this game close?
Probably for the first quarter or two before that crowd kicks in and just the atmosphere of Austin Stadium. That stadium up there is probably – you know, one of the top two or three noisiest stadiums throughout the country. And nevertheless, Kenny Rowe, those guys defensively, you know, Clay Matthews, those guys are play. Have a huge game tonight. But nevertheless, I think Oregon wins at least by 2-3 touchdowns tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big score there too. I mean, maybe if, you know, UCLA was 100%, but if they're bringing in a new quarterback, but, you know, it looks like it. It's just going to be a tough night for them to go in there. The crowd is going to be pumped up. Great atmosphere there in Eugene, as you very well know, not an easy place to go to. Another key game in the Pac-10, Washington at Arizona. Arizona is still up there as maybe the toughest challenger for Oregon. They're not going to have Nick Foles, their top quarterback, for the Wildcats. Washington on the other side, Jake Locker threw 5 touchdowns last week. They're only 3-3, so they're going to have to play well the second half if Locker's going to want to avoid pulling a John Elway and completely missing out on a bowl game throughout his whole college career. Is there an upset watch here in this game?
I don't know, for the simple fact that, once again, we're talking about a stadium that's probably going to be sold out again, Sea of Red there, as they're calling it, there in Tucson. I think Locker did a good job last week just in terms of distributing his ball to his offensive playmakers outside of Polk. I mean, Kurtz played a great game last week. Some other guys played a great game last week, but I don't know if he can go down to Tucson and win that game. I know Foles is going to be out probably longer than one expected. Dislocated kneecap is probably going to take more than a couple of weeks for that to heal. I mean, that thing needs to get stabilized. But nevertheless, I think Grisby and a couple of those guys, Justin Kreiner, some other playmakers, particularly on Arizona's offense, is really going to have a huge game this weekend. And on top of that, we got defensive ends like Elmore, you know, Brooks Reed. Those guys played a tremendous game versus Iowa, you know, in that matchup, and I think those guys are going to pin their ears back, and particularly coming off that loss versus Oregon State 2 weeks ago. So, you know, coming off the bye, those guys are going to be hungry, and I think they're going to get after Locker this weekend.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. I, you know, part of me wants to find a way to go for the upset, but, you know, you got to factor in that your Beavers and my Beavers, too, I like them. I picked them to win this year, but their pass defense is among the worst in the country. Now
yeah.
You're talking about an Arizona defense that leads the Pac-10 in scoring, defense leads the Pac-10 in sacks, is second in red zone defense, third against the pass in the conference. So Locker's really going up against a much, much tougher pass defense than he did last week. I mean, that's got to be a huge factor.
Yes, it is. Like I said, once again, I mean, we're talking about a situation where he played a great game last week versus Oregon State, and a disappointing loss for the Beaver Nation. But nevertheless, I think, you know, 2 weeks in a row, can he pull off a Cinderella upset? I don't know. Like I said, he has ups and downs where he's trusting his playmakers 1 week, and the next week, you know, those guys aren't in sync, you know, outside of Polk. So it'll be interesting to see how they hold up versus the pass rush. Probably the best duo defensive ends in the Pac-10, and Brooks and Elmore for U of A. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this weekend.
All right, Calron, thanks a lot for joining us. It's a pleasure as always, and looking forward to talking to you next week.
Hey, take it easy. Thanks.
All right, that's Calron Sykes, our super scout, former Oregon State Beaver himself, defensive player, linebacker there for Oregon State in the Pac-10. And just want to throw out there, too, since we're talking about Washington and Jake Locker, great column in this week's College Football Insiders by Mark Lazarbowski. That's even harder to say than Prince Amakura from Nebraska here. I'm just fumbling over these names. Mark was out there covering the game for us. He did a nice player spotlight on Jake Locker in this week's College Football Insiders. We also have a column on Cameron Newton and the Auburn Tigers. Our preview of the week, game of the week, is LSU against Auburn, which we're going to be talking about in a minute with the Reverend Ralph Mantini, who's on the line. We also have our one-on-one with Tyrone Wheatley, who has some interesting things to say about his NFL career and waiting to get an agent and kind of some of his thoughts on being a Michigan Wolverine and playing in the NFL. He's now a running back coach at Syracuse, so you can get College Football Insiders by becoming an all-access football member. Go to NFLDraftBible.com and become an all-access football member, and you will get your College Football Insiders newsletter. Also on NFLDraftBible.com is an interview Mark did with Mason Foster, their middle linebacker, on Monday. He was able to speak to him on Monday after their win over Oregon State, so he has some insight to that player as well. So Jake Locker, Mason Foster, go to NFLDraftBible.com and learn more about that. Also, don't forget, sign up for our Twitter at CFB Insiders, and you can get all the tweets, all the information, and get updated whenever we have new columns. But right now we're going to bring on the man himself, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. Ralph, how are you doing?
Hey, what's going on? Stuck in a little New York City bumper-to-bumper traffic, but everything else is okay right now.
Yeah, what else is new, right? All right, Ralph, let's start with the big game this week, LSU against Auburn, a pair of teams that are undefeated. Obviously, you know, everybody knows about LSU with their miracle win against Florida, their miracle win against Tennessee. Auburn's had some close calls as well. As you mentioned last week, the defense has given up a lot of points. It was a crazy, crazy game last week against Arkansas. I think the key matchup here is going to be that Auburn offense, that running game with Cam Newton, Dyer, and the other back, his name is escaping me now, the speed kid, against that, McCaleb, against that LSU defense that has really a superstar player at the college level, at each level. You got Nevis, you got Shepard, you got Peterson. How does this, head-to-head matchup go, that Auburn offense against that stout LSU defense?
Yeah, well, you know, Auburn has a great offense, as you mentioned. They put up a lot of points, and obviously, and I'm not breaking any news here, but the nucleus of that offense is Cam Newton, and if you don't stop him, if you don't neutralize him, then you have no shot of beating Auburn. So, I mean, the way you do it, obviously, is you got to keep Cam Newton in the pocket. You can't let him run away. You can't let him use his legs. And obviously you can't blitz him. We talked about that last week, and Arkansas was insistent upon blitzing him last week, and he burned him almost every time. If those defensive ends prevent him from gaining the outside edge and making those runs to the outside, to the perimeter, and let him operate as a pocket passer, then you have a better chance of beating Cam Newton, because we all know that, you know, operating as a regular drop-back quarterback, he's not that accurate, and he's going to miss some guys who are wide open. He's going to miss some guys in the end zone who are wide open. So that's the way you beat Auburn. And, you know, does LSU have the defense to do that? I think so. I mean, as we mentioned, those three guys that you brought up just now, those are, you know, three of the best defensive players in the country right there. And so I think that I think they can definitely do that, but it remains to be seen. Now, on the other side of the token, you know, does LSU have the weapons to beat an Auburn secondary that's very porous? And they definitely have the receivers to do that. Guys like, you know, Terrence Tolliver, Russell Shepard, Reuben Randall, all of those guys are very talented. But, you know, where I have my doubts is in the quarterback play. I don't like that two-headed quarterback system they have with Jared Lee and Jefferson. So, you know, they're going to need to make more than two or three plays in the offense, in the passing game, to beat Auburn, in my opinion. It's not going to be like, you know, going up against Florida where, you know, you could just, you know, count on Tolliver to make two plays for you and win the game. They're going to need a lot more than that to beat Auburn, and that's why I think that Auburn – comes out victorious in this matchup.
Yeah, unfortunately, as I've been doing all game, I hate to do this. I hate to agree with all my guests, but I got to agree with you, Rev. I mean, even last week against McNeese State, that's right. I'm sure most people didn't even know they were on the schedule for LSU. LSU was only able to throw for 103 yards. So while they have the weapons in a Tolliver, in a Russell Shepard, in a Reuben Randall, they have the receivers, but they can't throw the ball to themselves. So this is a vulnerable Auburn defense, particularly the pass defense, as you mentioned. But if LSU can't take advantage of it, it might not even matter if that defense does step up and play well, because they're not going to completely shut down Auburn. All right, Rev, let's go back to your comfort zone, as I like to say it, in the Big Ten, Wisconsin. Big game last week against Ohio State. That offensive line just controlled the game. I mean, you know, you can talk all you want about John Clay with the number shaved in his head, and he was the first back in, you know, 30-something games or whatever it was to go for over 100 yards. We all know, me and you could have ran through some of those holes. That offensive line is phenomenal, could be the best in the country, and they could be going up against what is arguably the best defensive line in the country. Earlier on in the show, we broke down Claiborne versus Karimi. Now I'm going to just ask you to break down the unit versus unit, O-line against D-line, immovable force, incredible force meets immovable object. How do you see this matchup breaking down?
It's all going to start and finish in the trenches in this game. And, you know, while Wisconsin has a very formidable offensive line, they're always big, they're always strong. I think that, you know, guys like Gabe Karimi at tackle and John Moffitt at guard, they're the types of guys who I think that can hang with those defensive linemen in terms of power, in terms of strength, and in terms of sustaining their blocks. But are they going to be able to stay with those guys athletically? You know, because, you know, you're talking about Adrian Claiborne, Christian Ballard, Broderick Binns. You know, those guys, they're not only big, but they have quick feet. They can move. You know, watching a guy like Adrian Claiborne, you would never think that he's 285 pounds by the way he moves. So I'm going to have to give the slight advantage to the Iowa defensive line, because I don't think that Wisconsin is going to be able to stop them for 60 minutes. I mean, do you double-team Adrian Claiborne and what? And then make things a lot easier for Christian Ballard to break through? You know, so I think that, look, this Iowa defensive line is just ridiculous in terms of depth and talent and athleticism that there might not be an offensive line out there that could stop them for 60 minutes. And that's why I give Iowa the advantage here. And, you know, going over on offense, I think that, you know, Iowa has the better playmakers as well at the wide receiver position. When you're talking about guys like Marvin McNutt and Darrell Johnson-Koulianos, you know, guys that have done it before, you know, guys that can make a play on third and long. So, and then factor in also that Iowa's playing at home. That's going to be an advantage as well. I like Iowa to win this game. I think it's going to be tight, but I think the Hawkeyes are going to prevail, probably by a touchdown to 10 points, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, I see it around there. I could see it 10 points. I could see it maybe even two touchdowns potentially pulling away at the end. Rev, I got to throw it out there. You left out my man Ricky Stanzi, 13 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He's really, you know, improved this year in terms of his decision making, don't you think?
Yeah, he has. He has, but, you know, I like the situation.
Ralph, are you with us?
Yeah, hello, you hear me?
Did Ricky Stanzi make you go silent?
Oh, man, I mean,
we have lost the Reverend. Suddenly he is tongue-tied when the topic of Ricky Stanzi.
Hello?
Yeah, Rev, are you back with us? All right, we have lost the Reverend Ralph Mancini. But, yeah, I agree. Iowa's my team. As I said before, they're still my Big Ten pick. I'm going in that direction with the Hawkeyes, and Ricky Stanzi is a big reason why. I think they're going to win this week. I think they're going to beat Michigan State. I think they're going to beat Ohio State. So I think they're going to roll, run the table. They're going to finish in the top five, and they're going to go all the way to the Rose Bowl. That's my pick. I'm sticking with it. And I believe we have the Reverend back. Ralph, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I mean,
right,
Ricky Stanzi, to answer your question, I mean, he does look a lot better. He's a lot better in his decision-making. I think that a lot of it is the result of a solid offensive line that's getting better each and every week, a good running game. And, you know, this is the type of guy that could do damage if you keep him in the pocket. I think Stanzi gets in trouble when he tries to move or when he has to move outside of the pocket. So as long as he's got a good running game, he's got a solid offensive line, you know, I think he can continue being productive.
All right, I hear you, Rev, there. Let's not forget, though, that offensive line was better last year. So, we'll see how he goes the rest of the year. He still has a bunch of big tests, and one of those big tests is going to be Michigan State, who is undefeated, who has a quarterback that you definitely, I think, like better than Ricky Stanzi. Michigan State going at Northwestern. Any chance they're looking ahead to their game against Iowa? Any chance of an upset there in Evanstown?
Well, I think there's definitely a chance because, I mean, let's face it, Northwestern has some weapons. They have a terrific passing game. All they really do is pass the ball. You know, Dan Persa is one of my favorite quarterbacks. I know he's one of your guys also. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he'll pass it on every down if he has to. A guy that ranks in the top five, not only in total yards, but also passing efficiency. So, yeah, they have a chance. And, you know, also factor in that Michigan State Spartans, you know, have some holes in the secondary, you know, with Chris L. Rucker suspended. You know, that's a big loss there. You know, last week they had Darquise Dennard come in and replace him. And, you know, Dennard did come up with a fumble recovery, but at the same time, he's a guy that's a bit raw, and he really needs to polish up his technique. So, you know, there's an area right there where, you know, Northwestern could expose the Michigan State defense. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, that Michigan State defensive line is very underrated. They're hard to push back. They're very stout. And then on offense, you mentioned Kirk Cousins. You know, to me, he's one of the more underrated passers in the nation, a guy who I think is the best play-action quarterback in the Big Ten, a guy that is very polished, very smooth. He looks off defenders, and, you know, it's no coincidence that, you know, they've won seven games in a row, and a big part of that is their quarterback, is the play of their quarterback, Kirk Cousins.
All right, I can't wait to break down that Michigan State game against Iowa with you next week. But we're looking forward to this week's games first. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Take care.
All right, that's the Reverend Ralph Mancini. You can hear him every Sunday here on the Fantasy Sports Channel with the Fantasy Football Insiders. He is joined by Rick Saratella and our boy Ross Mandel, the editor for the College Football Insiders newsletter in Colorado Buffalo. All right, let's bounce back to my conference picks here. I went through the first three BCS teams, so we got three more to go here before we close out the show in 3 minutes, so I'm going to have to do it a wee bit faster. Big 12, I had Boomer Sooner number one. You know, I didn't think I was breaking any news by saying the Red River rivalry would probably decide who wins the Big 12 South. That team would take on Nebraska. I know Nebraska had a lot of momentum as the team to beat in the Big 12 last week. We had Oklahoma number two to start the season. They've won every game. There's no reason to bail on them now. I know they've had some close games here or there, but, you know, at the end of the year, they're going to have ended up playing a whole bunch of bowl teams, you know, and while maybe their scores aren't as impressive as some other teams, they have found a way to win every week. They really haven't had that cupcake of a schedule, and, you know, seeing what Florida State did to Miami, something that Florida State win looks a lot better, a chance to prove themselves even more this week against Missouri. I just love what they have on offense with Landry Jones, DeMarco Murray, Ryan Broyles. It's kind of like the triplets, how the Cowboys used to do with the, you know, the big quarterback, big running back, big receiver, not necessarily big in terms of size, but big time playmaker. Broyles on pace for 122 receptions. And that defense, I think, is just going to get better and better and better as the year goes on. They had to replace a lot of key guys that left last year's team. And young freshmen like a Tony Jefferson, like a Tom Wart. Jefferson's a D-back that can play safety, can play corner. Wart is a middle linebacker. They're coming on really strong. Travis Lewis is having a big junior season. So I see this defense just getting better as the year goes on. And I see Oklahoma continuing, rolling, and being in that BCS title game once again. In the Pac-10, this is where we're going to bail. This is the one place that we are not going to raise. We're going to fold on the Oregon State Beavers. Now, you know, they're not completely out of it. Let's not forget, they only have one conference loss. The other two losses are to teams that are in the top five. So they still could be a threat. They will play host to Oregon. So that's a winnable game. But right now, knowing what we know, six games in, it's kind of hard not to go with the Ducks. And the SEC, you know, like everyone else, I had Alabama. They were the number one team in the country, so obviously the number one team in their conference. And even though they're behind right now two teams in LSU and Auburn, I'm still going with the Alabama Crimson Tide. I mean, obviously one of those teams is going to lose this week. Now, they have one conference loss, Alabama does. But don't forget, South Carolina is in the Eastern Division. So that's not going to cost them in terms of winning their division. If they run the table, they still have to play LSU. They still have to play Auburn. They win those two games. They're going to win the West, and they're going to get a chance to play in the SEC title game for the third year in a row. And I think they're going to have a chance. I'm not saying they will, but they will have a chance. It's possible that they could play in the BCS title game once again. I'm pretty sure a one-loss Alabama team is going to trump an undefeated Boise
is going to trump undefeated TCU. It's going to be tough to pass Oregon and Oklahoma if they stay undefeated. Maybe even Michigan State could be interesting. But I think if there's only one other undefeated BCS team and Alabama's there with one loss, I think they could end up being number two in the country. All right, folks, thanks a lot for listening to us and College Football Insiders. We want to enjoy the week. Go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out our College Football Insiders Week 8 preview, as well as all the columns that we have on college football. And listen to the Fantasy Football Insiders this Sunday at 10 a.m.